Welcome to the Time We Have podcast, presented to you by Motor Neuron Disease, New South Wales. MND New South Wales acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land we live on. We pay our respects to all elders, past and present, of all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander nations.
When peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, whatever my lot, thou hast taught me to say, it is well with my soul, it is well with my soul, it is well. It is well with my soul.
Hello and welcome to the MND New South Wales podcast, The Time We Have. I'm Sabine Krajewski and I am much looking forward to meeting Kerry Thomas today. Kerry and her husband, Mark, have a young family, work full-time, are planning a trip to Europe when Mark is diagnosed with motor neuron disease at the age of just 41. This was 10 months ago, and it is important to Kerry and Mark to raise awareness for MND and to make sure that the person does not get lost behind the disease. Good morning, Kerry.
Good morning, Sabine. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I assume you are at home.
Can you draw us in a little bit? Where you're sitting or what's around you?
I am in what our family calls the Lego room because we are avid Lego builders and it's an activity we've done with our family for many years. So I'm sitting in here as the quietest room in the house.
Playing with Lego at the same time. Don't do that because we will hear it on the podcast.
Not at all.
Okay, so in the next half hour or so, I would like to get to know you a little bit. Could you introduce yourself and say something about what the most important hats are that you're wearing at this point in time. What are your roles and identities?
Absolutely. So as you said, I'm Kerry. I am a wife and a mother, and I do work, but now it's 4 days a week in paid employment, which is the first time in my adult life I haven't worked full time. I'm the primary carer for my husband, Mark, and our boys who are 12 and 10. And that makes me the family secretary and treasurer and spokesperson, but it also makes me a problem solver. And that sometimes feels like the thing I do the most of. But I'm also Mark's advocate when it comes to his ongoing health issues, and also trying to make sure that there's awareness around this beast we call motor neuron disease and what it means, and doing as much as we can to make sure that we find treatments that work and a cure so that other families don't have to go through this.
Yeah. So what does that involve when you say you advocate? What are you actively doing?
I guess most front of mind is my sister and I have signed up to do the Three Peaks trek in November.
Yeah.
Where we get to summit three of Australia's highest peaks as a fundraiser for MND New South Wales, which, as you well know, is an organisation that has provided great support to Mark, the boys and I, but also provides awareness and advocacy and research to try and find treatments and a cure, and practical support to both people living with MND and also their carers and their families.
Tell me a little bit about Mark. So where have you two met, and how did he become your special person, and vice versa?
So Mark and I were actually leaders on a camp together when we were 19, and became friends and started dating shortly thereafter, and got married about 4 years after that. And that was nearly 23 years ago now. So we've done more of our lives together than we haven't, so to speak.
So you got married in 2003.
We were, yes. So 20 years just before the trek in November, actually.
Right. And I heard that you both were also singing together at that time when you met.
Yes. So Mark, he's a classically trained singer. So he's sung all throughout his teenage years and involved in many performances at his school. And he was singing in an a cappella octet when we started dating with friends from his church. And I joined that group and we sang together for 4 to 5 years, and we sang at, you know, almost all of each other's weddings, and it was just a lovely time that we shared together.
Fantastic, yeah. And people may have noticed that our music is a bit different this time, and that is because we are actually using Mark singing.
And if you listen carefully to the next bit, you can hear someone jump on stage to sing with him.
And that was on your wedding anniversary. All right, so you got married in 2003 and you had all these plans.
We're just planning a trip to Europe, and then Mark was diagnosed. But I think you told me that it wasn't straightforward, but you had quite an odyssey, or Mark had quite an odyssey to get that diagnosis.
Yeah, so we're Sydney, and it was during the second lockdown. We were all at home together in 2021, and Mark was noticing, I guess, a loss of muscle strength in his dominant hand. And at first he thought that was just, you know, something like a nerve pinching, because he'd been sitting in a different desk, but it was quite persistent. And thankfully he started the process of getting that looked at, and many scans and tests and more tests. And really 7 neurologists later, we ended up in the care of Professor Dominic Rowe at Macquarie Uni Hospital Clinic, who diagnosed Mark the day that we met him. And so I guess our journey was a little bit shorter than many people's are. It was really 9 months from first symptom to diagnosis for Mark, but we were very actively pushing to get to the bottom of what was going on, given his age and no other reason for it happening.
Yeah. How come, you said you saw 7 neurologists? How come that it took specialists to look?
So the first neurologist Mark saw ran him through the battery of tests, and in the end didn't like what he was seeing and wanted a second opinion. Mm-hmm. And that second opinion sent us to a clinic at a public hospital. And Mark was seen by 6 different neurologists over the course of 3 months at that clinic. And in the end, they didn't give him his MND diagnosis. The differential diagnosis was that it could be that, or it could be something else, and we'll try and treat the something else first. But that treatment was actually impacting Mark physically. It was exhausting him, and we weren't happy with that. And so we went and sought the opinion of Prof. Rowe, who, gave us the news we didn't want to hear, but it meant that we could start preparing for what was to come.
Had the disease progressed in those 9 months that you were looking for a diagnosis? Or?
Very much so. I went to most of Mark's appointments with him, and I could, see the deterioration from month to month as they were doing the various tests, and certainly just the loss of strength, not just in Mark's dominant hand, but then in his non-dominant hand. And so it's certainly been far more rapid in the 10 months since his diagnosis, but it wasn't stable from when the first symptoms occurred to the day he was diagnosed.
Okay. MND is a devastating diagnosis, and it did change Mark's life, but it also changed the lives of all around him. So how did you adjust as a family, and what are the major changes?
I think it's how we continue to adjust. I think that's one of the things about MND, is just when you think you know what's happening, things change. And I think for us, Mark's abilities are constantly changing, and certainly his needs are as well. And things that used to be, I guess, not just easy for him, but easy for us as a family, are no longer. So something is what seems as simple as leaving the house is in some ways almost like a military exercise now, and we all have our parts to play, and it's not just a matter of thinking about ourselves. One of the things that I think has been really key for us is that what's really important has changed for us. I think the pandemic did that for a lot of us, but a member of your family receiving a terminal illness gives you absolute clarity around what really is and isn't important. You know, and having a spotlessly clean house is not important in the grand scheme of things. And so it's not that our standards have slipped. It's just what we're comfortable with and what is acceptable is very different these days.
Yes, you have to redefine your priorities, and what used to be important may not be anymore. Certainly a spotless house won't be one of the priorities.
Absolutely. Look, we're in our early 40s. You know, exactly. We used to joke with each other about, you know, who was going to die first in our 80s, you know, and that's certainly not our reality these days. So it does bring that focus for you.
Yeah. Mark had to stop work, and I understand that was very hard for him.
Yeah. So Mark wanted to keep our lives as normal as they could be for as long as we could. And he certainly wanted to work and, you know, have that impetus to get out of the house and do something every day. And when he was first diagnosed, there really wasn't a question of that happening. But, you know, over the next few months, it became very clear that he was just fatiguing and physically not able to move about as he was before. And so it was really 5 months after diagnosis that Mark retired, as he likes to put it. And it was only a week or so after that that he started using a forearm walker to assist him with mobility. And so the changes came about quite quickly. But making the decision to stop working and knowing that that was permanent was a really difficult thing for him to come to terms with in and of himself.
That's right. Yeah. Well, he's in the middle of his career, right?
So he wouldn't be thinking of
retiring for another 20, 25 years or so.
Yeah. Understanding that his worth is not defined by, you know, the vocation that he does. Absolutely.
Yeah. You said you also had a career change, or you still work as a financial advisor, or did
No, so I took a deliberate career change before Mark's diagnosis. I'd always wanted to slow down the pace I was working before our eldest son went to high school, which he started year 7 this year. And so I left financial services after 20 years, and I now work in the public sector. But I have gone from working full time to about 6 weeks ago, reducing my working days to 4 days a week, simply to keep on top of the life admin for our family and managing, you know, things from medical appointments to service agreements for Mark's allied health professionals and all kinds of things. And it was just, it wasn't getting done, and that was the only lever I had to pull.
And pulling, that means you're still working 2 full-time jobs.
Yes.
Not that you do less. It's like you have two full-time jobs.
Exactly. I was saying to people, I only work 4 days a week now, and they would just look at me and go, that's not true. You only get paid for 4 of those. So,
Well, it's good that people see that, at least, because, you know, we count as jobs only what's paid, but, you know, carers and caring is definitely a full-time job.
Oh, absolutely. And the ironic part of that is that Mark had always been the primary carer of our boys. He worked school hours effectively. And so I had always said that to him and meant it wholeheartedly. But when the shoe was on the other foot, it was, you know, really hard for me to accept that.
Yes, so it has become more and more difficult for you to get out of the house and go to appointments, but then Allied Health are coming to your house as well?
So a lot of our Allied Health absolutely now come to Mark, mainly because the act of getting him out to those appointments would physically exhaust him. And therefore those appointments would be less beneficial. We do still, whenever we're going to see the professor, or Mark is also participating in a clinical trial. And so those appointments we need to go out to as well. But it does take a lot of organisation just to think about what do we need. And Mark is moving into a power wheelchair over the next couple of weeks. And so even thinking about what vehicle we need and how many people can fit in it and can it take all of our equipment and those kinds of things, it means that it's not as simple as just grabbing a bag and getting in the car anymore.
Sure. Did you need adjustments to your home or Mark to get around?
Yes. So thankfully our home, well, it's two story. So that has been tricky. The bottom story is very flat. Yeah. And Mark hasn't been able to come up the stairs since beginning of November. And we didn't have a shower downstairs. So we had been going to his parents' house a few times a week to have a shower. We've almost finished modifying a room downstairs into a bathroom. And so Mark's had the first few showers in our home for the first time since November last year, which is good, not just from a time saving, but just the physical effort that, you know, on him, the of toll course. That it would take to go over there was just exhausting. So
You mentioned his parents, so they're supportive, they're close to you. Who else is your support network?
So we are very blessed to have a lot of people around us supporting us. So both sets of our parents are close by, fit and well, and have been helping me care for Mark on the days that I'm not home as we build up our professional caring. We have an amazing friends network and church family, and both the boys do Taekwondo, and we've had a lot of support from the families in our Taekwondo club. And the boys' school, whilst obviously not doing physical caring in terms of the home and Mark and those kinds of things, have been a great emotional and mental support for the boys as they try and navigate school whilst knowing what's going on at home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're going to talk about the boys, but first want to know how you look after yourself, because to look after others, to look after Mark and the boys and everything that's happening, you mentioned service agreements for supports and so on. How do you look after yourself so that you're able to do this long term?
This has probably been the area I've struggled with the most. I think it's the old adage that, you know, we always forget that, you know, if we don't take care of ourselves first, we can't, you know, we don't have the energy and time to do that for others. So I think what I've slowly realized is that I need to be honest with what I can and can't do, and be comfortable that if you ask for help and someone says no, that's okay. It's not that they don't think what you're asking for is important or worthy of their time. It's just that their bucket might be full as well. I think finding what fills my cup and gives me fun or happiness or just a breakaway, and I mean like an hour or so, not longer than that. I don't do that yet.
Maybe small doses of respite or relaxation, or and people have different ways of finding that, but you need to find it, otherwise you'll burn out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the most recent thing and sort of the biggest change is that we've started having professional carers coming into our home, and I don't think I realized how much that would benefit me in addition to the benefits it provides for Mark. I thought it would only benefit me by, you know, helping me be comfortable that people were here caring for him when I wasn't, but there's a lot more that carers do than that, and I'm very grateful for our village that does that. But I can certainly feel the weight of responsibility lifting, or, you know, the little things that I didn't realize.
Sharing it a little bit and being reassured and maybe be able to ask a question here and there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's really good. About the boys, so we talked about the boys before. They're both our martial arts champions.
So yes, our youngest is the national champion in his division.
Wow.
And
that just happened recently, or?
Yes, in December, which very interesting trip down to Bendigo as a family, which we're thankful we could do. Our eldest son fought in a head kick division for the first time at his first nationals, and he didn't medal, but fought so exceptionally well. And we're incredibly proud of him, and just the way that he approached the competition and was so supportive of, you know, his friends from our club, and how he carried himself. It's amazing for confidence, but it's a lovely reflection of the young man he's becoming.
Sure. And sport is not all about winning anyway.
No.
But when you're a kid, you usually don't see that. Yeah, and he's...
I think that's one of the, you know, it's one of the things you can have, you know, so many people in a competition, but there's only ever one winner, you know, and sort of, you know, our biggest thing is that it, first and foremost, they have to be enjoying it and it has to be fun. And if it stops being about that, then it's time to stop. But, you know, really, yes, you do compete against someone else when you're on the mat, but you're also competing against yourself and, you know, trying to improve and do things differently and take the learnings. And yeah, that's it's incredible to see him talk about that and what he's learning and watch him grow as a martial artist as well as a young man.
Sure.
Now that sounds really good. Where do you get support for your boys?
Yeah, so we so friends and family are definitely a critical support for the boys. Our eldest son is part of the M&D New South Wales Youth Hub, and so it was really until the first time he jumped on one of those calls, they didn't know anyone else who had a mum or dad who had M&D, and so it was just. I guess a happy sad, happy as in I'm not the only one or we're not the only families going through this, but a sad realization that there are others. And but it's a good way for them just to meet and not necessarily talk about what's going on with their families, although they can, but really just know that they're not unique in that way. And there are other families on this journey as well.
There's a lot happening with the Youth Hub. It is a national youth hub, so it's for all young carers from across Australia. All the associations are on board, and the young carers are invited to create their space in the way they need it to support each other.
It gives them a forum because adults don't quite know what's happening in young people's heads and hearts.
No, goodness not.
Yeah. It is important that they also have each other. Do the two boys talk to each other about what's happening?
We've always had a really open dialogue with our boys in an age-appropriate way. And so from the beginning, we've let them ask questions about what's going on with Mark as they were comfortable. And I remember our younger son saying to me that his brother was the only person who really knew what he was going through, and he was glad they were doing it together. And certainly that they are a great support for each other, although they are processing and dealing with it differently because they are two very different boys.
And different ages, even between 10 and 12, there is a...
Absolutely.
His brother is the only one because he sees that...
They're in a different position and they see things from a different perspective.
Absolutely. And also, I think they feel a responsibility to not make me sad in their words, because they know what, they know what I'm going through as Mark's wife and as their mum. And, you know, so sometimes I've had to...
protective of you as well.
Very much so. But being present for the boys from both Mark and my perspective is also a really critical support for them. And sometimes that's just, you know, not doing homework or not doing something that we planned and diverting because you can tell that's what's needed, or being present for a massive conversation when one of them just asks a question about why we're going through this, and you've got to be there and answer it and be honest, because they can see straight through it if you're not.
Exactly. And that's what you said before. There are the priorities, and you get your priorities right. And the boys will be the priorities. There's one question. I remember that when you went to a carer retreat with M&D New South Wales last year. And I remember that you were worried about a session we offered with a counsellor that was about changes in life and about coping with change and loss. Now, we had a bustling session for the kids at the same time, but what was your fear there about that session for the boys and the boys possibly participating in it?
Yeah, so I guess I wasn't quite sure how the other participants would process and what they might say, and how that might impact the boys, or that certainly topics might come up that we hadn't broached with them yet. But they're also very private people, and that they weren't yet in a position where I thought they were processing their own grief, their own anticipatory grief and of what's happening and what's about to happen. And I didn't feel equipped to participate in that session as an individual and care for them as their mum should they need at the same time.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's really hard to say to your children that their father has a terminal disease and there's really nothing we can do but love him and care for him and make the time we have count.
Yes, and that's actually a lot.
I had asked you to ask a couple of questions to Mark.
Yes.
Because he cannot be in this discussion because he's losing his voice as well, right?
That's correct.
So did you manage to ask him what he's most proud of in his life?
I did. And I think Mark's answered that, you know, what he's most proud of right now. His answers to the question. So Mark said that he's most proud of the fact that he has been able to keep his spirits up and be humble or be able to be humble enough to ask for help with so many things, a lot of which are quite confronting. And for anyone who's ever cared for someone who has a loss of mobility, you'll probably understand exactly what that means. But when you're a man in his early 40s who was expecting to live a long and healthy life, I think that we can all put ourselves in the shoes of understanding what that might look like.
Yeah, that's an amazing answer. Really, really wonderful answer.
He's an amazing man.
Yeah.
My sin not in part, but the whole is nailed to the cross, and I bear it no more. Praise the Lord, praise the Lord, oh my soul. It is well with my soul. It is well with my soul.
So we talked a little bit about that you also are an advocate and an activist for your husband, Mark, and for everyone else who has MND. You mentioned that you might be going to start a blog about your experience. Is that going to happen?
Yes. Yep. So I was actually really challenged by a conversation you and I had a couple of weeks ago when you were naming your podcast, and the conversation you'd had with your colleague about, you know, ensuring it was positive and was named in a way that you intended and reflected what you were hoping to present on the podcast. And so I had thought about a name that I thought worked, but it really could have been taken to be negative, and that wasn't my intention. So the blog is called How to Show You Care, and Mark and I have really found that lots of people want to help, but more importantly, you know, when Mark was first diagnosed, people felt like they needed to say something, like they needed to acknowledge what we were going through, you know, or validate it, but sometimes it just completely missed the mark. And sometimes it was actually unintentionally quite hurtful or unhelpful, but we could see the intent behind it. And so the intent of the blog is really just to be able to share some of the things I've learned, both as someone caring but also as someone receiving care, you know. And I've, even since Mark's diagnosis, I've heard of friends and family and colleagues going through difficult times. I often say that everyone's going through something, and even I found myself struggling with the right words to say, because I think that it is awful, and it doesn't, but it doesn't have to be the perfect words. And so, yeah, I really just wanted to, I guess, put some things out there around, you know, my thoughts and our experiences, and hopefully one day that might help someone, or if not, just validate what they're going through and help them read something while they drink a cup of tea.
Yeah. I was just wondering when you mentioned that, when you said people feel like they have to say something, but then sometimes it's not the right thing, or it's, it can even be hurtful, which of course may people who are listening to us now may make them feel, or maybe it's better not to say anything, so it might scare them into saying nothing at all, which is also not good, right? So
no, definitely not. Yeah. That's never my intention.
Can you give an example of what didn't work for you and what did?
Yes. So someone said to me when I was going through a particularly rough day, someone said to me, "Well, all of our husbands are dying," and whilst that is technically true.
What does that mean? Like eventually or what?
Yes, as in, like, you know, the only, it's almost a, sort of like the saying, you know, the only thing certain in life in death and taxes, you know, we're all going to die. And so we're all going through the process of dying is what I think they were in, you know, trying to say.
Okay.
At a moment when they didn't know what else to say. And so I felt invalidated, or that my feelings were invalidated, and I really struggled with that. And it, I had to sit in it for a while and really understand that person was struggling with the right thing to say. And because I was where I was in the moment, I've actually had so many people say, "That's awful news and I'm sorry to hear it and I don't know what else to say." And that is quite okay. I don't know what I would say to someone.
Correct. Yeah. It is hard. It's just to hit the right tone and to say the right thing. What is the right thing? It also depends on maybe the mood of the day or what happened just now. Or
absolutely. Yeah. And also your relationship with the person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't expect a casual acquaintance to instantly commence deep and meaningful conversation, but, telling your best friend is very different to telling the person that you just met in the elevator.
Yeah, sure. We talked about that it's important to Mark and you that the person does not disappear behind the disease, right? So we still talk to the same person. He's the same man he was without MND. So it is important to see that and to live in the now as much as possible. And from everything you're saying, it's exactly what you're doing. How do you create positive memories for your family? How do you live in the now, but at the same time, remember that what your boys have from this time, they will remember for a long time? How do you make that work?
Yeah, I think one of the things that we've decided to do as a family this year is something fun once a month. Yeah. That's not to say we don't have fun for the rest of the month, but that it's a deliberate and intentional special thing. That's very clearly, you know, what we're doing. And so Mark and I picked that for the first 2 months of the year. We're heading off to see a movie in the recliners this weekend, which the boys have picked as designated the fun thing that we do. And so that's been really important to us, and we've been very intentional in telling them that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We also went and had some professional family photos done in January, which we hadn't had done since our youngest son was born 10 years ago. And so it's just a beautiful visual reminder, certainly for all of us, you know, of who we were then, and they've got that. And even just the process of having the photos taken was fun, and we still talk about that.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that we do is something that we've always done, is that we have one-on-one time with each of our boys separately.
Yeah.
So Mark and I with each of them, and, you know, individually, just to make sure that we keep doing things like that we've always done, because we think it's really important relationally to, you know, have those moments, whether it's, you know, playing a board game or going out for a milkshake, that you know, it's just that special time.
I like the idea of the positive experience once a month, because it's also something that the boys can, they have input in that, right? They choose the film or they choose the activity. So it's it really is a family thing. And the same with the portraits. I mean, that's fantastic. I think all hell breaks loose here. Do you hear the sirens around me?
I do, yes, but it's, I wasn't sure if they were on the recording.
This is terrible. Just have to.
Are you safe?
Yeah, I don't know. Oh my God, there are flames. But seriously, there's a fire truck, and I know
I can see your video. You're just like, the flames. I'm like, really?
No, it's not. It actually happens quite regularly. There is an aged care home around the corner from me. And then that something triggers the alarm. And then, of course, the fire truck comes and then goes off.
Someone's burnt the toast.
Exactly. That might be it. The fire is put out. Don't worry about the fire. I asked you to ask Mark another question, and that was what he finds most important to spend his time on.
Yeah.
What's his answer to that?
So this answer probably really surprised me because as much as Mark likes people, if you gave him the preference or the option between going out to a large gathering or staying at home, he would often pick staying at home before his diagnosis. And so his answer was deliberately spending time on or intentionally spending time on being with other people. It would be easy to hide away and contain himself from everyone else, but leaning into the reality and talking about what he's going through with people helps him far more than he ever thought it would.
Yeah. Wow. Another fantastic answer. I'm going to meet this guy. It sounds fantastic. And so, yeah, thoughtful and thorough in his answers. It's great.
Especially because every word has to count for him. Because Mark is, he's losing his ability to speak. Mm-hmm. And so he is deliberate and intentional with every word he says. He has spent time message banking, so recording words and phrases to create a synthetic voice, which he'll start using in the near future. But just the act of creating words with his mouth is far more taxing. And it's not nowhere near as clear. Mark has always had perfect diction,
as a singer.
and so the fact that he doesn't have that, and he, even to me now, he's having to repeat himself sometimes. He makes every word count.
But it's great that he did voice banking and he will be able to use that. That's fantastic. I need to ask you the same question, of course. So what is most important to you at this point in time? What do you find important to spend your time on?
Other than the things that really matter?
No, the things that really matter.
I was going to say, I spend my time on the things that really matter, and I try not to spend time or energy on those that don't.
So your house is a mess. And a second.
Yeah, my house is a mess. Absolutely.
So is mine.
you literally take us as you find us now, and I've stopped apologizing for that. And I'm okay with that. I am deliberate and intentional about finding ways to be Mark's wife as well as his carer. I think it took me a while to realize I wasn't being intentional around that. And so that's definitely important. I think finding that your tribe, those people that you can tell you're having a really bad day to, or just ring and say, hey, can you tell me a joke? Or how are things in your life? Because I need to not think about something for a while. I think it's really important. And they are different people for different people. And I think that those kind of relationships are two-way. And I'm, said to my friends, I want to do life with you the way we've always done life. And just because we've got this really big thing going on in ours doesn't mean that you might not have a really big thing in yours. And so making sure that I'm intentional around sharing their burdens and sharing mine.
Yeah, that's really well said. Kerry, thank you very much for your time. And I am looking forward to your blog, and we will put it on the website so that everyone can find it and read what you have to say. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Sabine.
And Lord, haste the day when my face shall be sight. The clouds be rolled back as a storm.
MND New South Wales is funded largely by the generosity of community members, with only around 10 to 15% being received from government funding. If you'd like to donate, please go to www.mndnsw.org.au/donate or give MND New South Wales a call and one of our friendly staff will assist you. Check out our website for more information at www.mndnsw.org.au or call the MND New South Wales info line on 1800 777 175.